So what we have in store for you today is actually the all-speaker Q&A following the TDV Summit. That's the Dollar Vigilante Summit, which was an event that was right before Anarchapoco 2019. So we've got all the different speakers who are on stage. They're all on stage at once. And there's basically people from the audience who ask questions. And here we are answering all those questions. This is an event that you definitely want to make sure you're at next year, especially the main one, Anarchapoco, down in Acapulco, Mexico. Just a great event with all sorts of free thinkers, great minds, and really probably the best, not probably, it's the best event I've ever been to. And whenever I go to other conferences, they all basically pale in comparison to Anarchapoco. So it's sort of a letdown, even though the other conferences are pretty cool. I will say the 2018 Nexus Earth Conference was also absolutely amazing, so I don't want to give any slight to that conference. Now, if you're listening from Arizona, there actually is going to be an Anarcha Arizona event going on the March 30th up in Sedona. So I think tickets right now are like $25. I think it goes up to $40 soon. Might be $40 by the time you listen to this. There's a affiliate code Crypto IRA that's 10% off. So, you know, super deal up there in Sedona. They got the likes of myself, which is probably the smallest name there. Ernest Hancock, Jeff Berwick is going to be there. Scott Sorensen, Larkin Rose, and then a few others. So this is an event you don't want to miss up there in Sedona. The website is anarchizona.com. And actually, for some reason, Facebook is not even letting us post those links. So anarchizona.com. Hope to see you guys there. And now, without further ado, we've got the all-speaker Q&A from the TDV Summit.
So you can start lining up. Go ahead. And you can address it to one person or just anyone. And we're going to do a sort of dog-eat-dog Darwinian world here. And whoever feels as if he or she has the answers, just jump right in.
Hi, my name is Nicholas. The question is for Caleb. Caleb, have you thought about doing a peer-to-peer lending through your platform that you would lend directly from another person in the same town or something?
Absolutely. That's definitely something we've explored. But we looked at the existing peer-to-peer models. And it's a little bit deceptive. If you look at like SoFi, Prosper, some of the larger ones, only about about 5% of the capital lent actually comes from peers. And there's a lot of problems there. Like institutional money tends to be more of that capital. One, because the cost of capital is a little bit higher. They're able to spread out the risk a little bit further. Now we see a world very shortly coming where peer-to-peer lending is much more of a force, and we are positioning ourselves to facilitate that. It's just not quite there yet. I think some on-chain protocols, there some amazing work is being done that we're really excited about too, because that'll help us connect things as well. But I think it's a future that's coming, just not quite just yet.
Anybody else on that topic? Peer-to-peer lending? Go ahead.
Well, this is for anybody. What appears to be the most stable, non-volatile cryptocurrency now? No, is there no such thing?
Stable coins? if anybody's not familiar, pegged currencies are currencies that are pegged to real-world assets. A lot of times currencies, for lack of a better, it's a very stable, slow, steady decline, but the US dollar is relatively unvolatile. So there's USDC, there's Tether, there's a multiplicity of pegged crypto assets. But there's also some projects coming out that are pegging assets to real world things like real estate. So for the time being, those are relatively stable. If you're talking about free floating currencies, I don't know who may know what the least volatile free floating currency is. Jeff, maybe?
I would just say I think the term stablecoin is the biggest joke ever. The US dollar is going to be the least stable thing in the next few years.
So for right now, I did preface that. Right now, it's a very slow, steady decline. It very well could be a fast, rapid decline. But at the time being, it's the least volatile.
Yeah. I heard about a stablecoin that's tying itself to treasury bonds. It's so stable, you're buying $21 trillion worth of debt of a bankrupt terrorist organization. That's a stable coin. So. But I understand, and yeah, if what you're looking for is a crypto that isn't too volatile right at this moment, the stable coins, totally. The USD coins or whatever. Yeah.
Could I say something just on that as well? In terms of asset allocation, you shouldn't be in cryptos for stability. You should be in for the long haul and the run generally. is my take, and have other things for that.
I'm interested in fund transfers, but not as an investment.
Okay, got you. And someone else said something about FX. If you were interested in fiat that you wanted to hold, if that was also part of the question, then you could go Swiss franc and Singapore dollar, generally over the dollar, because they just got much better debt situations. And actually, when we have a major, major contraction of fiat, it's the yen that goes up. So the yen is a fear index. I watch it in the markets. So I don't know if that's useful. Might have mission crept a bit there, but.
So I want to ask a question, something I haven't heard mentioned at all, and a little bit contrary to the idea of a dollar collapse, which I'm not saying I don't think can happen, but one way it tends not to happen is that they say U.S. doesn't export many things, but I think the U.S.'s biggest export is insecurity to other places in the world, and that's how they tend to get people to send lots of money into the U.S. dollar, because everywhere else is just not safe enough. So any opinion on the ability of our masters to keep propping this thing up by just making it really crappy and dangerous to go anywhere else?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, so that's a good question. You mean insecurity in terms of capital, or you mean, you know, like fear-mongering?
All of the above. I mean, I think they have a whole basket of strategies.
Yeah, there's no doubt. That's sort of how they've sort of bullied their way into becoming, you know, having a dollar, you know, a dollar that's lasted so long. You know, I think if you go back to the 70s, you know, when Nixon delinked, they actually thought that the dollar would do well because the Friedman had basically elaborated a theory about free floating exchange rates that made sense, that would also, you know, that would basically self-correct all their imbalances that they had built up under the Bretton Woods system. So, I mean, over the years, in my presentation, I tried to explain that the way the dollar had become a reserve currency was fundamentally because for a long time America was just more capital friendly. Its capital markets were genuine. It was the only, for a long time, it was the only consumer market in the world. All these things have changed, right? I don't think that the dollar's role as a reserve currency is fundamentally legitimate. Yeah, there's a lot of coercive things. You know, like there's a lot of underhanded ways. No doubt that they try to destabilize regimes all over the place as part of dollar policy. I wouldn't be surprised if that was included too, right? But I think things have changed. I think people look at America differently today. I think the explosion in cryptocurrencies over the last 10 years, I think signals that we are at the end game of that system. So, because the market is, you know, as I said in my presentation, I think the market is saying, look, there's a problem here. There's all sorts of imbalances. You know, there's these currencies are unsound, so the market's generating new alternative currencies. I don't know how long it'll take. It could take 10, 20 years still, but I think things have changed. The fundamentals that made the dollar what it is, I think those things have changed. So it's just a matter of time.
Thanks.
Yeah, let me give you an idea, which is an alternative way to think about U.S. debt. And it goes all the way back to the Romans. When the Romans had their great empire, they used to exact tribute from all the regions of the empire. And that was how the Roman Empire survived. And because we use the word US debt and we use the word debt, we think about debt, government debt, in the same way that we think about personal debt. You lend someone some money and they've got to pay you back. Well, really, you know, I think it's useful to not think of US debt so much as debt, but it's a polite way of saying tribute. And that's all it is, really. It's tribute from the other countries. It's never going to be paid back.
One thing on that. Everyone's always trying to peg timing, like, or an event-driven thing that's going to make the whole fucking thing crash. I just view it in historical terms. empires are cyclical. That's it. I mean, Egypt, Greece, Rome, the Byzantines, the Mongols, most recently France, England, it's not gonna last forever. Trying to peg, it might be a war that does it, it might be an economic event. It's hard to predict that first domino that's gonna cause this thing to go bye-bye, but empires do rise and fall. And my theory is that this is one in decline, and the East will end up winning, or it's gonna go East, it's gonna China, stuff, whatever, but empires rise and fall, and I think this one's falling.
On that note, it's worth bearing in mind just how much gold China has. And America has something like 7,000 tons. It's the world's largest owner of gold, at least assuming that the gold is there. But the China recently announced it's increased its gold holdings by a whopping 50 tons. I think it's 1,600 and something tons, which would be about, you know, a sixth of America's gold holdings. But a number of experts, Koos Janssens is one of them, have studied gold flows. And it's worth remembering that China has become the world's largest gold exporter. It reached that status in 2014. And it does not export a single ounce of all the gold it produces. It keeps everything. In addition, it is also the world's largest gold importer. And so it's the world's largest producer and the world's largest exporter. But if China goes around and says, yeah, we've got more than 7,000 tons of gold, we've got more gold than the US, that is an extremely confrontational thing to do. And it's really throwing down the gauntlet. And so tactically, it's much wiser to carry on, you know, selling your US debt, selling your US dollars, and slowly accumulating more and more gold. But if you study gold flows into China and add gold flows into China to the amount of production that China has, official Chinese gold holdings, and I'm not talking about private gold holdings, official Chinese gold holdings are probably almost as large as the US is already. And within 3 or 4 years, they're going to be considerably bigger. And you know, he who has the gold makes the rules. Even in today's, you know, digital world, gold is still the money of last resort. And you know, that is a big threat to American supremacy. But the other thing, on the other hand, it's also worth remembering that the Roman Empire went on for many, many hundreds of years, even after it was long since bankrupt, and the US could quite easily do the same. So I think we'll be all right.
So I believe it was August 3rd, 2011. I can't remember if it was Moody's or S&P that downgraded the US debt. Let's say you had a cousin that worked there and gave you a tip that, hey, you know, we're gonna downgrade the debt next week. What you would have done is you would have, if you wanted to insider trade in that, you would have predicted, hey, now the US government has less of a chance of repaying their debt, and yeah, go figure. There's less of a chance that we're gonna get our money back, their creditworthy rating is going down, and what you would then expect is you would then demand a higher interest rate for lending out your money. Now, you have to understand is that most people always do the wrong thing at exactly the wrong time, which a lot of people up here today mentioned that in their presentations. And so what happened on August 3rd, 2011 is people then actually ended up demanding more US dollars. So don't assume that people are gonna do what's rational, because people always almost do the wrong thing at the wrong time, and you just don't know how long it's gonna take to shake out, which is why I talked about the sequence of return risk. Because what's probably gonna happen is you're gonna have the markets, or let's say the dollar, or let's say the stock market goes down, and then because of fear, because maybe we're the best shirt in, you know, dirty laundry, that people then flood into dollars. But eventually the only way to, you know, quote unquote, save the stock market, because you can't have deflation in a debt-based monetary system. And for anyone who's seen Mike Maloney's Hidden Secrets of Part Money, Part 4, you saw where it showed, I can't do this with, you know, got the hands over here. But you saw the part where it shows, you know, the debt's over here and the money is down here, and if you use all of your money to pay off the debt, the entire system ends up collapsing. So you can't have deflation in a debt-based monetary system. So then what they would probably do is then print trillions and trillions of dollars, which would then cause everything to go up, but you don't know the timing of that. And that's why, not to belabor the point of sequence of return risk, but people are always doing the wrong thing at the wrong time. And if everyone was as smart as the people in this room and we didn't have this rigged system, it'd be pretty easy to predict. But unfortunately, that's not the case what we have today.
Yes. My name is Jerzy from Norway. I have a very general question. It has been said that the total debt is much larger than total amount of money available in the world. And my question is, who is actually getting the money if they were supposed to be paid back? Who is the beneficiary? Who's getting rich? Who is holding the assets if the money will be paid back?
Well, I mean, not to take it, but it's mathematically impossible to pay off the debt because the money is based off of debt. So if you lend out the very first dollar in 1913 that was lent out, had 4% interest on it, so then you then would then owe $1.04 at the end of the year. Well, you mathematically cannot pay back $1.04 with a dollar, so you have to borrow another dollar, and it creates that whole like Ponzi scheme effect that I was just talking about. But I don't want to hog the time too much, so I'll let somebody else kind of answer that.
I think the government's lying to us. I think they're lying about gold. I think they're lying about markets. I think they're lying about the dollar. I think they print a whole lot more than 21 trillion. Catherine Austin Fitz has done some great work, but that's just what they tell us. You know, that's an extra 30 trillion. Why not a quadrillion? Why not two quadrillion and not tell anybody? I think every government in the world is doing that. You know, at the end of every unbacked fiat system, this has lasted the longest since 1971, because all the market rating. At the end, they just print and they don't tell people. And they've always done that. And they're doing that now. It's just this computer market rating is delaying the inevitable, the end of fiat money. It's easy to me if I hear a government statistic, I think it's a lie. Even gold, all the work I've done in gold, I find it very interesting that the History Channel has a Yamashita's Gold television program coming out next month. And we're on the brink of something big in gold. You know, they've been holding it down since, 1913. And we're on the brink of something really big there. I'm excited about it. Yeah, I think there's a lot more gold, but I think there's a hell of a lot more fiat dollars, so I think gold's gonna go absolutely crazy.
To Bix's point, I actually mentioned it today in my speech, that was my red pill moment. Like Bernanke testifying, and they're trying to drill him on off balance sheet transactions, and this is Congress, and they're like, all right, where'd it go? And he's like, paraphrasing, he's like, blow me. Like, I don't want to tell you anything. So we don't know, and they don't have to tell us. And I was an econ major. And they don't mention that at college. Like, oh yeah, by the way, the Fed chair can just tell Congress to fuck off and not tell them we have off-balance sheet transactions. So we don't know the numbers, and they won't tell us the numbers. And you know, that's per his point. You know, it's not conspiracy. They openly tell you we don't have to show you anything. So
make a note to do some research on the CAFRs, Combined Annual Financial Reports. Some fascinating information. These are off-ledger assets that are being held by the government, which proves they don't need to collect a dime in taxes to operate. They've got all the money they would ever need to do their functions. The taxation system is merely a method of control through fear and intimidation. All right? CAFRs, Combined Annual Financial Reports. Look it up, you'll be amazed.
Hopefully I can add on something useful. Basically, you asked, you know, who is it? It's basically the Federal Reserve. There's a fictional movie called The International, and there's a particular scene in that movie that it talks about the debt and owning the debt and having control over the entity that you owe the debt to. So think about this. The banking system doesn't give a crap about issuing money or debt. All they care about is the interest on that debt. And if you go to John Perkins, you know, economic hitman, you find that the leverage of owing us something we can't pay back gives a great deal to basically confiscate, taking, ripping off whatever term you want to use, an asset of a country such as oil, as an example. So we owe it to, you know, this idea that we owe it to ourselves is bullshit. We owe it to the banks, basically. Now, on the unfunded liabilities, the Veterans Administration and Social Security and all that, well, they, unfortunately, as Casey would say, Bubis Americanus, actually think that there's an asset there that they're going to collect. They're not. So hopefully I added to the discussion.
All right, so I don't want to offend anybody, and I don't want to reject everything that's been said, but on that question, I don't think anybody can know how, if it came down to cashing in the chips and you had everybody trying to pay back their debts, I don't think it's calculable to really know who's going to end up with the most chips. I really don't think it's easy to pinpoint any central bank or any banking institution. Maybe, I don't know. But the key thing is about monetary policy and what they do and why they inflate and why it, you know, it, we have a debt-based economy, but that's a symptom of the monetary system that we have, right? Because they're always trying to suppress interest rates to inflate asset values, right? They're trying to suppress interest rates to so that the government has another way of financing expenditures and a way to live beyond its means. It happens in the private sector also as a consequence. It's a mode of redistributing wealth and income, right? So it's like a tax. The process of inflation, of inflating money. So it's a never-ending process. It's a tool for them. It's not that they're trying to trap you into debt so that they can cash in the chips at the end. That's not the way that this is going to work. They're stealing your chips every single fucking day.
And to add to Mark's point about the comprehensive annual financial reports, there's a really good documentary by, I believe the guy's name is Walter Burian, and very few things blow my mind, but that was one of the things several years ago that blew my mind. So I think his name is Walter Burian. I think actually Ernie's interviewed him a few times, but just type in his name and CAFR, and it will absolutely blow your mind. It's like a Creature from Jekyll Island type blow your mind type thing.
We've got 4 minutes.
Hey guys, this is JP Bizarre from Phoenix, Arizona. We always hear about being prepared, that we should be prepared, but what I'm missing from the equation here is what kind of solution do we really have when it comes to the rigging of the gold price, the silver price, crypto prices? Do we have a solution? What can we do as a group, as an entity? Because we're always on the tail end of losing, and other people that are rigging the market, they're the ones controlling the market. You know, how do we get rid of them? Why isn't there two different Bitcoin prices, the derivative market price and an open market price? I mean, I don't care if the derivative market drops to $1,000, but the open market should be at $10,000 or $20,000 for Bitcoin.
It's a great question, and I'm going to come at it from a totally different perspective. I think that anytime we're dealing with Bitcoin, fiat currency, gold, anything that we cannot consume as people, right, we're dealing with something that's inherently controllable. I think that, you know, the ability of people to, you know, live independently together, which I think we do as a group, right? I mean, that's community, right? The idea of controlling the means of production, and somebody referenced Marx earlier, and that was a great reference, right? I mean, controlling the means of production. If we can control our own food production, if we can control our own housing, if we can control the things that sustain our life and our viability, then we have real control over the things that truly matter, right? When you get into Bitcoin, currencies, gold, silver, I think all those things are important, right? But at the end of the day, the fundamental basis is the living being that we are, and we must control that if we are to survive.
So for me, from a trading point of view, not from a fundamental point of view, because I don't know how we're going to control it, but all I do know is, from a trading point of view, to make money, just play the same game that they do. Don't, when things fall, buy it. Don't panic sell it. When things run, don't buy, thinking, oh, I've got to get this before it goes. So just play the same game that they play, from a trading point of view, not a fundamental everyday use. That's what I'm talking about. So just play the same game they do, because it is. It's manipulated. We all know it. Everybody complains about it. Everybody whinges about it. Them. Yes, it's true. But from a trading point of view, just do the same thing as them and make some money.
Just real quick. Regarding crypto, it's been really easy for us to call bullshit out. in the market, especially in the open market, in the unregulated market, in the OTC market, over-the-counter trading. And what's interesting is that once we figure out that, oh, maybe these brokers are lying to us in the market, telling us that there is a demand or there's supply that we've come to realize is not really there, the market right away spreads the word, and that attempt to subvert the market in a way or to control prices right away dissipates. And so it's a beautiful thing to see that when it's completely open and transparent, they don't have government to hide behind, right? And like I've been watching Vix's videos, and he's been calling things out regarding crypto, and he's been really researching like things that are questionable. So yeah, once things are out in the open market and our community starts talking about them, right away, it's hard for that to perpetuate. So that's a very positive thing in the culture of the crypto world. So yeah.
I think the best thing about blockchain is that it's bringing back the business cycle, right? The only way you can avoid the business cycle is with printing and inflating the currency. And when things move more towards blockchain, I don't think you can avoid the business cycle. So I honestly don't think there's much we can do other than let the chips fall where they may, and that's exactly what it should be.
On that, my favorite subject, my take would be expose it, like you're talking about, expose the criminality. For example, Litecoin in the last 2 days has traded, 100% of the Litecoin has traded in the last 2 days, if you look at them in volumes. That's ridiculous. So it's not Litecoin being traded on these exchanges. If we expose it and then remove ourselves, proof of keys, oh my God, what a movement that is, proof of keys. We tried to do it in silver. Max Keiser tried to remove silver to kill JP Morgan. We didn't have enough silver, and they had a lot more derivatives. But if we keep exposing the criminality, exposing that these markets are not real asset markets, they're derivative markets, and we remove ourselves from them, that's the best way to get rid of them.
Great, thank you very much.
Unfortunately, we are out of time, I'm so sorry. But listen, it's been a glorious conference, and how many of you are staying for Anarchopolis? Yeah, right. So, look, you think of yourself as the well-educated elite ruling class of the rest of the conference. What I mean by that is you understand the culture, you understand the friendliness, the aspirations of the conference, the desire to really emerge as a real community, so you can sort of see the conference, welcome everybody who's coming here from all over the world, and let's build this into a mighty, unstoppable movement, and I'll see you shortly at dinner. Thank you.
Him I should thank for my tattoo.
Oh yeah.
Is it?
Why would anybody want to buy Bitcoin inside their IRA? I mean, the whole point of Bitcoin was to have peer-to-peer electronic cash. So why are you going to have a financial intermediary buy Bitcoin for you? Why don't you just cash out your 401k, cash out your IRA, cash out your retirement plan, and just buy Bitcoin on your own? Well, the reason for that is if somebody had January 1st, 2017, invested $100,000 into Bitcoin, and then 1 year later, they would have had, after taxes and the 10% penalty, they would have just under $900,000. So you would have turned $100,000 into close to $900,000. So you're obviously doing something right. However, there is a better way that they could have done it. What they could have done is they could have done a Roth conversion. With a Roth conversion, you save the 10% penalty, so you've got 10% more that could be invested into crypto. And the beauty of this is that now all of your gains are now forever tax-free. So you put the $100,000 in, And now, and again, you're getting out of paying a 10% penalty. And now, after even all my management fees, you now have a little over $1 million. We have all the exact specific numbers linked down or should be on the screen right now. I don't have it memorized. But, you know, to me, you know, $1 million sounds a little bit better than $900,000. And having tax-free gains forever sounds better than having $900,000 that now any appreciation or hopeful potential appreciation would then be subject to tax. And the other reason why we thought of this, or really the genesis of this, is I had heard a lot of people doing this, and I thought that, hey, there's got to be a better way. But the main reason is you've got a lot of people who the only money they have to invest is inside of their retirement accounts. A lot of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, even people who have million-dollar IRAs, a lot of them don't have actual extra money to invest. They don't have rainy day funds. And the rainy day funds should be kept in actual safe, liquid, you know, basically cash or really short-term treasury bills. It shouldn't be invested into Bitcoin. And so a lot of people just don't have that extra money to invest. And so taking a small percentage of your IRA or 401k and then, you know, putting it into Bitcoin, if you know what you're doing and you understand the risk and you actually believe in this philosophically, is actually, I think, you know, a good move to make. So again, if you're going to pull money out of your 401k to buy Bitcoin, you should talk to myself, because I think that the Roth IRA conversion is a much better way of doing things, and that is why somebody would want to consider having Bitcoin inside their IRA as opposed to cashing out their 401k and just buying it outright.
Okay, well, that's great. You've got people who have IRAs and 401ks, and you know, there's different things you can do or that I can do to help them out. But what about the person that has maybe a few million dollars of gains and they bought it on Coinbase or Kraken, or they got several millions of dollars of gains and all of a sudden now you want to go buy your Lambo or buy a new house? I mean, there's no way you're going to be able to skirt around the IRS, because they're going to wonder, you know, hey, how'd you get that $500,000 to buy a new house? Well, for those people, probably the best person to explain this is actually my friend Ernest Hancock, as he was giving me an introduction at Anarchapoco. Anyways, I'll let Ernie take it away, because we can also have advanced trust strategies for the people that have millions of dollars of gains. This is not just for people who are looking to invest parts of their IRAs or 401ks.
A good friend of mine, Tim Pachote, he's a financial advisor at Scottsdale. He'll be speaking at the TDV event. You'd be able to bring the crypto into the system. How would you be able to do a foundation, a trust, a this, a that, and so on? And Tim was at the party, and I go, Tim, what up? He's been spending months that he's getting ready to present to you guys Monday on how you can take your crypto and not pay capital gains on it, not have taxes on it. I'm going, man, you need to talk to Tim.
Thank you for listening to the show. One of the ways you can help support the show is by seeing if it makes sense to invest with myself. I'm a certified financial planner with Innovative Advisory Group, LLC. Innovative specializes in self-directed IRAs where you can invest into virtually anything, including virtual assets and cryptocurrencies inside your retirement accounts. And get this, you can actually hold on to the private key. And that's something that nobody else is doing, at least with the help of an advisor. We also run protective growth portfolios where you invest a small amount of your portfolio into put options, and while the rest, and that basically helps protect the rest of the portfolio. Not very many people are familiar with put options, but a lot of people are familiar with homeowners insurance, and it works in a very similar fashion. So essentially what you're doing is using a very, very small percentage of basically, you know, the value of the home to protect the rest of the home. And if the house doesn't burn down or there isn't a major catastrophe, then you're basically out on the cost of the insurance. Flip side on, you know, if your house ends up burning down, well, then you build your house back. And that's really the same thing that's going on here. So if the market ends up tanking, and we know the most that you can possibly lose on your investment, and honestly, if the market were to go down 60-70%, and you're only down single digits potentially, then that's an amazing buying opportunity. Lord Nathan Rothschild said it best, that the best time to invest is when there's blood in the streets. But if your money goes down with everybody else's, then you're not able to take advantage of the next crisis. And also, if you're just camping out in cash or in bonds, making next to nothing, you could be going broke safely for a very long time. And then you've got to know when to time the market. And that's something that basically nobody can do. Now, on the flip side, if I'm wrong in all this and the market keeps going higher, or the Federal Reserve comes out, or the European Central Bank comes out and says, hey, we're going to print a whole bunch more money, and the market goes to infinity, well, then you'll go up to infinity minus the cost of that put option. So I think that this is a great strategy that you definitely want to learn more about. I mean, just given the craziness that's going on right now,
I mean, if you're heavy into cash right now, heavy into bonds, or even heavy into stocks, especially if you're close to actually needing those funds for retirement or just needing those funds in general, maybe for a big project, or maybe you work on a crypto and you raised a whole bunch of money, that this is something that we can help protect yourself and protect your loved ones. And there's nothing you have to lose by scheduling a free consultation with us. And actually, there's a chance you could lose a lot by not talking with us in general. If you go and click on our website in the upper right hand corner, there's a Work with Tim button up there. You can see all of our plans, ways we work with our clients. Pricing can all be found there. And given that I'm sort of out there on a lot of different political issues, I know that I'm not going to be for everybody. You know, that's sort of my way of qualifying you, not the other way around. But, you know, I'm fine. I'm not trying to have all six billion people out there like me. And I'm here to really, at the end of the day, to tell the truth and to make money, not necessarily make friends. So head over to thelibertyadvisor.com and let's see what we can do for you. Thank you.